The Port of Baltimore oscillates between being a top 10 port and a top 15 port in the United States. It's definitely a top 5 port on the eastern United States. You saw Pete Buttigieg, Secretary of Transportation, go on and talk about how it's not as though this is a Long Beach harbor or a harbor on the West Coast to take in 40% of our trade. Well, that's because it's the trade that comes from Asia. But for to sit here and minimize the impact of what this Baltimore harbor would have on the supply chain is just, well, it's idiotic. Because first of all, we're obviously going to see inflationary costs rise. Just over the next 30 days, we're going to have to see trade move up and down the seaboard. You and I both know that the longer that these ships sit out in the ocean, the more the costs are passed on to the consumers. So there will be an immediate inflation from this.
You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
And welcome. You are listening to and watching the Financial Survival Network. I'm your host, Carrie Lutz. Well, you've heard about the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapsing, a lot of rumors about it, a terrorist attack. I mean, Francis Scott Key authored the Star Spangled Banner when he was in a British prison ship in the War of 1812. So was it symbolic? What do we make of all this? Well, Jason Nelson is with us. Jason, thank you for your service. You were you worked a lot there. You were at Curtis Bay, and you know that geography there as well as just about anybody. What the heck happened here?
Yeah, it's beyond the obvious that it's just a horrible tragedy, and I do want to acknowledge that lives were lost in this. Obviously, there were a series of cascading errors that impacted what happened, and I don't think we can wave off any conspiracy necessarily, but we can definitely say that there are other reasons why this tragedy would have happened, and we can see the reverberating impacts that are going to come from that for a long time.
Yeah, so what effect does it have? What's the impact upon the supply chain? I mean, I think I heard somewhere Baltimore, Port of Baltimore is the 9th busiest port to the 17th busiest. Supposedly 3% of the country's trade goes through there. I mean, how bad is it really?
Well, when you think about the fact that most stores operate on about a 5% margin, I think it's not very hard to sit here and say that there could be a much larger impact across the country. But let's get into some details real quick on exactly what goes through Baltimore and why this particular incident is so important. The Port of Baltimore oscillates between being a top 10 port and a top 15 port in the United States. It's definitely a top 5 port on the eastern United States. You saw Pete Buttigieg, Secretary of Transportation, go on and talk about how it's not as though this is a Long Beach harbor or a harbor on the West Coast to take in 40% of our trade. Well, that's because it's the trade that comes from Asia. But for to sit here and minimize the impact of what this Baltimore harbor would have on the supply chain is just, well, it's idiotic. Because first of all, we're obviously going to see inflationary costs rise. Just over the next 30 days, we're going to have to see trade move up and down the seaboard. You and I both know that the longer that these ships sit out in the ocean, the more the costs are passed on to the consumers. So there will be an immediate inflation from this. But long term, well, we have to take a look at the accident itself to understand what this means. So do you mind if I opine for a moment here on the Baltimore Harbor?
Is you're our expert here. That's why we have you on. So you're entitled to opine.
Okay. So I was stationed at Curtis Bay. My primary job in the Army Special Operations was in civil affairs, but my last 2 years was attached to a boats unit right at Curtis Bay. In other words, I could throw a tennis ball and hit where the Francis Scott Key Bridge was. What you need to understand about the harbor there is that, and so let's cut down some of these conspiracy theories, and we can do that just by talking about operations. First of all, the person in charge of the vessel at the time it was inside of the harbor is a harbor pilot. That is a person who has spent years and years and years studying to understand that very nuanced shipping lane. The reason for that is you see that, the result, because what happens if there's an accident inside of a harbor? It shuts down operations, and that's extremely expensive for everyone, not to mention it could result in, obviously, loss of life and other things like that. So the harbor pilot was in charge of this vessel. When you're looking at the Baltimore Harbor, there's a very narrow channel. It's about 120 feet deep, and that they shift through. It's in the middle of the pylons that you would have seen in that bridge. What happens is a vessel comes in, unloads its cargo, and loads its cargo. It's pier side for about 48 hours. In this particular ship's instance, I can verify reports that there were power outages happening on the vessel during its 48 hours. Now, there's many numerous, it's repeated myself, there are numerous reasons why this could happen. That includes electrical systems, engine failures, other such things. But what we do know is that ships are slave to the dock, which means that most of their electricity, if not all, is coming from the dock itself. So if there's power outages, that's likely an electrical system. Now, this is supposed to be reported. It's supposed to be reported to the harbor master. The ship's captain is supposed to take note, as well as the ship's engineer, and they're supposed to address and fix the problem. In other words, to make the vessel seaworthy. A ship cannot. Right, yeah. Correct. So whether or not someone reported this, it is going to be something that the NTSB finds out over the next couple of years as they work their way through this investigation. Nonetheless, this ship did leave the harbor at 48 hours. Why? Because they can't stay there. Because if you have to do a major repair in your pier side and you're right there inside of that area, not only are you laden with your own cargo, which causes you a penalty for your employer, but you're also holding back other ships from moving. There are massive penalties for this. So there's an incentive for someone to lie or obfuscate the truth and move a vessel outside and move it from the pier. So there we have an issue. We also know that contrary to the graphics being shown right now, that it's the ship didn't make what you would call a port turn. It didn't move out and move out of the harbor and or into the shipping lanes. It didn't move directly into that. Instead, it swung wide. As a matter of fact, in a very dangerous way, when you look at the water in the shoals there, and you can see that it gets as low as 31 feet in some of those areas. So how do I know this? Correct. How do I know this happened? Well, not only do I have someone that verified that the data showed this, however, you could see in the long form videos that the vessel itself is moving parallel to the Francis Scott Key Bridge for prior to making its turn, its hard starboard turn, and then before it hit the pylon. So there we have another issue. What was the harbor pilot doing? Was he testing a system? Was there a failure in a system? We know they called a mayday. We know the power went out. So we get into another conspiracy theory here. The ship made an abrupt movement into the pylon. Well, I can answer that one in that the power went out twice on the vessel. And there are redundant systems put in place. But essentially, if someone had made a move, and ships aren't steered by their rudder. You know, this isn't the 1840s, right? They're adjusted, especially at slow speeds, by thrusters on the bow and the stern.
Mm-hmm.
So with this vessel, what it would have done, if you could see prior to the second time the power went out and where it was headed, I can see the maneuvers the captain would have made, or at least who was captaining the vessel, would have made to avoid hitting the pylon and to enter the center of the channel. With the power out, as it drifted, you could see when the power comes on the second time that it makes a sudden lurch. There's only two possibilities for that. The anchor that they had dropped, they would have dropped an emergency anchor, would have caught purchase, which wouldn't make sense in a declining V that would be the channel, or that the last commands they entered in were what hit and it made the ship adjust and suddenly slam into the pylon, which is a whole separate issue in that the Baltimore, the Francis Scott Key Bridge did not have protections in place and had 5 years ago had a budget to do so, but didn't enact it. So there's lots of
typical politicians doing what they do best, which is nothing.
Correct. So I look at this as that I'm not eliminating all conspiracy theories because you won't know until you get all of the results of the NTSB investigation. But what I can say is I'm seeing a lot of CYA right now. I'm seeing a lot of people pulling back information, and they're doing so because right now someone's going to be held financially liable for what happened here. And there's going to be a lot of careers that are ended over this. And in the end, you're going to see that it was a cascading level of failures. Right, correct. Now, why does our supply chain affected and impacted so much by this? Because the Francis Scott Key Bridge allows flammable materials to move over the bridge. That means that when you talk about all of the vehicles coming in, when you talk about fertilizer, when you talk about helium, anything that would that can't go through the two tunnels has to go over the bridge. And you can't just make a land route for the next and just send people over through a neighborhood to take these. They said it's going to take 2 years just to create an alternate route in order to move this traffic. So that's 2 years. For 2 years, harbors around the East Coast are going to have to take in that cargo that was intended for that. And that includes specialized loading and unloading facilities. And all of that creates inflation that is going to be passed on to the consumer. It's going to create artificial shortages. Baltimore is not the sexiest harbor. It doesn't bring in all of your finished goods. It brings in the things that make your finished goods, that make your factories work. This is going to have a long-term, huge impact on our supply chain. And you know, it just puts us one step closer because as we see between this, Texas Prairie fires, the food facilities that go up in flames, the railroads that are having crashes. You know, there's only so many accidents that we can have in our supply chain before our supply chain becomes overwhelmed and collapses. And this one here is a huge piece of it's another big foundational stone that's been removed from the building that is our supply chain. And eventually, it's just going to take one more, just one more. That's how much closer we are. And for them to treat it so lightly, Buttigieg to treat it so lightly and to say that, oh, you know, other people are going to absorb this.
He's not serious.
He's not serious.
He's a serious government official. He's a joke.
He's a joke. And it's treating it as though, hey, we had an earthquake here in South Bend. And, the other grocery store is going to have your groceries for you. This is ridiculous to imply that about 3% of the nation's traffic in cargo is somehow going to miraculously be pushed around to other ports and have it not impact at least the consumer level when we're talking about prices. This is going to raise prices across the board. This is going to have a massive impact. And then beyond that, again, where it puts our supply chain right now. That's why we created our company. It was because understanding that being able to turn around and vertically integrate and make a domestically dependent supply chain is so important right now. We are so focused on this international trade and the cheap products we get from that, that we've forgotten that our way of life is at risk, quite literally.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the supply chain is resilient, but it's also delicate, right?
Well, that is the point, right? So, look, they just culled how many chickens down here in Texas? And millions because of bird flu, avian flu?
Yeah, avian flu.
Correct. So, you know, we see this ebb and flow right now, you know. So, obviously, I pay attention to beef, right? So, at prepperbeef.com, we list it here. We focus on shelf-stable beef and not just beef, but, you know, actual beef people want to eat. Right. So, I have to sit here and watch the cattle here in Central Texas because I bought importing cattle. I'm not bringing cattle in from Argentina or Venezuela or Canada or Australia. We're sitting here. We're doing Texas cattle, which means that we're impacted very much so by the fires that just happened here in Central Texas, North Central Texas. But in the panhandle, they're going to need so much feed to be able to stay into the livestock they were able to save, which raises the prices here locally. And those local impacts, of course, because Texas provides so much cattle for the rest of the United States, impacts the supply chain there. Again, couple that with the excess costs you're going to see from Baltimore. Couple that with excess costs you're going to see from the culling of chicken herds. It's just, it is that precarious. And as we sit here in an inflationary nightmare, these are not the signs you want to see. What you want to see is you want to see production running smoothly. You want to see our supply chain running smoothly. You want to see the supposed infrastructure spending that the Biden regime put in actually have an impact, rather than just words and DEI and a bunch of people making TikTok videos about how they're all accepted.
Yeah, well, there's a lot more to the supply chain than just TikTok videos. Hey, what are three things the country can do to help strengthen the supply chain right now?
Well, the first thing you want to do is pay attention to what you're eating. And that's important. I say that because what you want to do is support local farmers. You want to support local ranchers. You want to support companies that support local farmers and local ranchers. So it's time for you to take a deep dive on the brands and what you get your food from. Understand where they spend your money, because it is your money. When you give them money, where do they take those profits and how do they spend them? Do they spend them to increase your quality of life, or do they spend them to decrease your quality of life?
Yeah.
So by supporting companies and people who's and local ranchers, local farmers, you're not only sending a message to these large corporations, but what you're also doing is to change their ways. But on top of that, what you're also doing is creating a paradigm shift. You're creating a parallel economy in which you can have a direct impact on the policies that impact you and your families. I would think it's important to maintain as domestic as possible to vertically integrate our supply chain so that we're dependent on Americans for American products. And I don't say that as a xenophobe. I say that as a person who understands that there are just certain things you can't farm out, and that is farming. It's something that we are great at. We are the breadbasket of the world, and we need to continue to embrace that. And the final thing I would say is that we need to pay special attention to the bureaucracy in this country and how through the EPA and through other regulatory agencies, through BLM, which has been reducing grazing land, BLM as in the Bureau of Land Management. Well, unfortunately, now there are two BLMs. Neither of them are good. How coincidental.
Yeah.
But the idea. The idea that we need to pay attention to the policies that are being put forth and be active. Be active with your state legislatures. Make sure they're not allowing people to put mRNA vaccines inside of your cattle.
Yeah.
Make sure they're not able to sit here and make vaccine-inducing food. I mean, this is a real thing. And for those who say that aren't possible, by the way, that's how we used to give vaccines to Afghan children. We used to put them on wafers and give them to them in their mouth. So, yes, you can give people vaccines through food. So we need to pay attention to what's being done. We need to make sure we stop with these Franken meats and these, they're making lab-grown food. Beef comes from a pasture, not from a Petri dish. So... these are the things that we could do. I know they don't sound simple, but they are simple. And they all center around one thing, educating yourself and then sharing that education.
Couldn't agree with you more. You know, I've been having Florida honey for 12 years, best honey around. And it also helps with local allergies, too. And Florida is, I think, the fifth largest producer of cattle in the country, but they ship it off to other states to finish it because there's nothing glamorous about Florida cattle.
Well, you guys have oranges, so I think you have plenty to brag about down there. So let us have our cattle here in Texas. Come on, that's not fair.
Organically grown, no antibiotics, no hormones, right? And free range, right?
Yes, that's any time that regenerative farming has been a key to that. And that's why we've partnered with the rancher that is focused on that, because being able to allow your cattle to move about builds better bodies. It's the type of protein you want to eat. You know, people can have their Kobe beef all they want. You know, this best cattle come from cattle that are able to free range, move about and grow as God intended. And, you know, there's a lot to be said. I understand why factory farming exists, but the thing is that we've been able to shift away from that. We've been able to create new methodologies. So factory farming came about so that they could create mass quantities of food. Now we found that we could create mass quantities of food without having to do factory farming. And I'm excited about being able to show that paradigm shift is worthwhile.
So true. I mean, a few, like 10 years ago, I noticed that the meat just wasn't tasting as good, even in good restaurants. And what my investigations discovered is that because they're using the hormone, the cow, they can butcher it after a year instead of 2 years because it artificially builds up its muscle and fat and all that. And since I switched back to the free range stuff, I found it's really as good as it ever was. It's that stuff that the Franken food, as we call it, you know, I call it what passes for food. Because it looks like food, it tastes like food, but it ain't food, Jason.
No.
It's not food.
People ask that because, so when we started Prepper All Naturals and PrepperBeef.com, the whole reason we did it was obviously supply chain issues and other things like that. But as we were building it, I began to educate myself. I started to see the things that these quote unquote innovations that they're putting out there. And did you see what the Italians are doing with, they've taken, I'm just going to tell you. So the spare parts of the cow, the part that quite literally they turn into cat food. This is their words, not mine. They bunch it all together and they put it into a machine that then makes simulated steak. And they show them cutting it, how amazing this is going to be. And I'm thinking, This is in Italy, and this is what's coming to the EU. You know what they're doing to the Dutch farmers, what they've done to
the EU's been very out front and proactive with food quality. There's a lot of stuff they won't even import from the United States because it's Frankenfood.
Absolutely, but here they are doing exactly the same thing. So, you know, it bothers me because we don't have a shortage of food, and this is not what's causing a climate disaster. The climate disaster is being caused by China, if there is a climate disaster. And, you know, I quite frankly don't think there is one. I think what we have is we just have a hysteria and we have a cult. But
we have a changing climate, yes, but...
Yes, but that's what happens at Earth.
For something to blame, you know, well...
Correct.
Cult.
Yeah, I mean... You know. They're no different than ancients shaking their fist at the sky and blaming the gods they can't see because their crops were ruined.
It just reminded me of something when, not political at all, but just the funniest thing, when Trump was elected and all of these people were screaming, and there's that one woman with the wool hat on, and she's screaming, and they're ranting and raving, and it's just like, but, you know, it's that thing. They're like... cursing the gods. Hey, Jason, question. Where do we find you? How do we connect with you on the web?
Well, you can find me, obviously, our company's at prepperbeef.com. We have a blog down there so you could easily track what we're doing. But if you want to find me on X, you can find me at @RealJasonNelson. That's @RealJasonNelson. I am on other platforms, but I'm going to be honest and say that I am way too busy with 5 kids and 2 companies to be able to spend much time on any other ones.
Totally understand. Hey, if you've got a question for Jason, myself, shoot me an email, kl@carrylutz.com. And the link to Jason's site will be in the show notes of this interview on financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Just click it and it'll take you right there. We're going to take a close look at it ourselves. And while you're there, sign up for your free newsletter. Jason, appreciate you stopping by. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Great conversation, Kerry. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to Kerry Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.